Greetings, my little oddities. Welcome to Odd Tuesdays. This is Monica Caraway from Small Biz Thoughts. If you are listening to our show on iTunes, please be sure to check out our website at oddtuesdays.com to catch this and past episodes, as well as to find links mentioned in today's show. Today, Carl talks to Sazmac CEO Dina Moskowitz and VP partner Clinton Gatewood about the reseller-friendly SaaS applications marketplace they have available. We are also joined by one of our resident oddballs, Rayanne Buccianico, who will share tips on keeping things simple with your business accounting. First up, an update of upcoming tech events happening. The Robin Robbins Bootcamp is on April 22nd to the 25th in Nashville. Carl will be in attendance. You can find out more at robinsbigseminar.com. The SMB Tech Fest is on April 23rd to the 24th in Anaheim. More information can be found at smbtechfest.com/events. The Channel Next East event is on April 27th to the 28th in Quebec. Find out more by visiting bit.ly, that's bit.ly/channelnext. The Great Little Seminar online MSP courses continue. The next class up is the Managing Your Service Board course starting April 28th. You can learn more about the year-round class sessions on offer over at greatlittleseminar.com. The ASCII Success Summit Tour continues April 29th to the 30th in Austin, Texas. Please visit ASCII.com for more information. The Globalization of SMB webinar series continues on April 28th, 10 a.m. Pacific, with special guest author and MSP consultant Richard Tubb. Registration is free. Go to bit.ly/globalSMB. The SMB Nation Office 365 Tour continues in Dallas April 30th. You can register at 0365tour.smbnation.com. You can find the full listing of MSP and tech events happening in Carl's weekly newsletter. Just visit carlsnews.com to sign up. And now let's head off to Carl and Sazmac's Dina Moskowitz and Clinton Gatewood.
Now I'd like to welcome to the show Dina Moskowitz and Clinton Gatewood from Sazmac. Welcome.
Thank you.
Dina, you're the CEO, so why don't you tell us a little bit about what is Sazmac?
Absolutely. Thank you for having us. It's actually good to be back because about a year and a half ago we spoke when just as Sazmac was doing its commercial launch of its platform. So we're still here and we're growing. And to give you an overview, Sazmac is a marketplace and distributor of SaaS applications that are channel friendly. So whether they are line of business applications or IT and security and compliance applications or whatever types of software that are coming out in the software as a service arena, we are finding those which are channel partner friendly and introducing them and matching them with resellers whose business makes sense to work with these SaaS vendors.
All righty. And Clint, is this something that you would say is designed for newbies, for people who are just getting started trying to figure out managed services and what to offer?
I think it's for any company that is doing managed services currently, whether they're newbies into managed services or newbies into the IT space. And it's not just for, but it's not just for newbies. Most of our partners are very sophisticated managed service providers, and it's not just for managed service providers either. There's VARs, there's resellers, solution providers, as most of them are always called or want to call themselves, but we have a lot of different, what you would call an indirect sales force that some of the applications are looking at insofar as telecom agents and telecom companies. There are human resource consultants that are also selling apps from Sazmac. Sales marketing consultants, business consultants, anybody that's delivering or working with a customer or an end client that is looking for a solution for, you know, sales marketing, CRM, backup. So really it's we're not just exclusive to managed service providers in the IT services world. It's really any type of consultant that's out there that's selling their services to another company to help them run their operations or their sales or anything really. It's really broad. It's just like the SaaS world is very broad in what it covers. The people that resell these types of applications or recommend them is also very broad.
And can you give me a sense of what your most popular applications are that you folks resell?
There's a lot of interest in all the applications that we have. Right now, when you look at some of the research that's out there and it's been done recently, small to medium businesses are currently using about an average of 8 to 9 SaaS applications within their environment today, and they're going to be adding about the same number over 2015. It's estimated that the smallest small to medium business will be using about 12 to 15 apps by the end of SaaS applications by the end of 2015. What they're really looking for over 2015 and 2016 to purchase, and what's driving the sales of SaaS apps, are things that are geared towards sales and marketing or new client acquisition, applications that will help manage the current client base and help them mine the client base for additional revenue, applications that will help drive down the cost of business operations, not just from an IT perspective, but from an HR perspective, from a billing perspective, or just daily management of inventory and their environment. So when you look at the types of applications that are being demanded by the end client, that's really the three top ones there is the business operations, sales, marketing. There's still a lot of marketplace there for backup disaster recovery still in demand. Offsite data, there's a lot of those pieces out there. Security is big, managed security. Business intelligence is a big one that they've indicated they're looking at purchasing. Again, driving, getting into know their business operations better, getting to know their clients better, getting to know how they're selling better. So it's really, that's where we see a lot of the growth currently.
And are these applications I've heard of?
Some of them would be applications you've heard of, and some of them you wouldn't. There's a lot of CRMs out there. There's Sofrant, and there's Green Rope. There's quite a few we have there. GammaSec on the security side is doing well. You're also seeing a lot of telecommunications. Unified Communications is really hot. And you're looking at things like Net2Phone, Sandler Partners, Crescendo, Net2Phone. So we have quite a few of those within the environment and within the ecosystem as well.
All right.
Right. And we have vendors that are horizontal and as large as Citrix, which has GoToMeeting and GoToWebinar and ShareFile. And then we have newer ones that have just emerged in the past couple of years, for example, a Phonami that can integrate Google Apps and Salesforce and other CRMs with calling systems, with unified communications for new paradigms of efficient workplace management. So it really does, we're seeing a really great and exciting range of solutions, and each one of them is something that many of the managed service providers should be looking at to see if they could add to their line card, because it will help to differentiate them and make them fresh and relevant in front of their own customers.
Right. So do you help me negotiate getting connected to Citrix, for example, or do I just create an account with you and then click, buy a few apps and set them up at my client's office?
So where we're at today is that we will make the direct introductions to the channel manager or VP of channel at Citrix and at the other vendors. As we grow and as new functionality rolls out in our platform, we're going to provide more of a one-stop environment to make it very efficient to manage all of your relationships with SaaS vendors within SaaS.
All right. And what kind of a partner portal do you have?
Well, what we currently have, in addition to listing all of your information on the SaaSNex marketplace and your reseller programs within the SaaSNex marketplace, what we're finding is many SaaS vendors are just learning how to develop world-class reseller programs, and we are guiding them in how to do that. And part of our offering to them is a WordPress portal that is optimized for all sorts of typical communications and deal registration and reseller registration and reseller different certification levels, so that SaaS vendors can very efficiently develop their partner programs if they need to. and get a portal up very quickly that a typical managed service provider or other solution provider from the channel would be comfortable using and feel that the vendors are using the right processes to work with them.
Right. So are there certain minimums that I have to commit to in order to sign up to be a SaaSMax partner?
No, it's completely free to the channel. They come in, there's no minimums, there's no commitment whatsoever to purchase anything. The biggest value that we really have to the channel when you drive it down there is really time to market is one of the biggest values that we have. If you go up and you type in any type of ABC application you're looking for into a search engine, you're going to get 50, 60, 70 different choices. And the time that you have to spend in weeding through everything and looking for the one that fits your business model and what your clients are looking for can take a lot of time. And as you know, a lot of resellers out there, they're wearing all the hats within the company. You did it yourself, Carl. You know, you were the business owner, you started the company, you were the CFO, the CIO. Spending a lot of time in looking at new products and vetting each one really slows your time to market and takes away from your time of working with your clients. So really we spend a lot of time, as Dina was saying, with the vendors, making sure their profile pages look well, that they're presenting the material to the partners well, in a manner that they can understand the business model and the revenue model and can make a decision quickly which ones to move forward with. So it really cuts that time of finding a product, packaging a product, and getting it to market.
Right. It sounds like a great opportunity for people who want to build vertical markets. The other thing that's interesting for me is the 8 to 9 apps are expected in each small business. So if I'm not selling anything, I need to get on that right away.
Yeah, I would say that you're absolutely right about that. I mean, there's a lot of apps being used. There's a lot of some of those are paid, some of those are unpaid. I think that the biggest challenge to the small businesses in the SaaS adoption and for SaaS companies reaching the small medium business marketplace is for the end client. It's the integration pieces. I can go out and I can buy a CRM or I can buy a project management piece of software. But then I got to set it up. I got to integrate with my other systems, my other business processes, and these pieces. So from an end client perspective, having that reseller there, having their solution provider, having their managed service by their trusted CIO, if you will, help them integrate that is a very key piece in the overall business scope.
Right. So where do folks get started?
So folks would get started by simply going over to SaaSMax.com. They could either peruse the marketplace without logging in, but we would encourage you to register as a reseller. And with that, there's no charge to register. It takes about 2 minutes. We do ask a few different questions about your business and your target market and your certifications and expertise. And then we will follow up and typically with a phone call to verify that you've been that you are a serious reseller, because when we do introduce you to vendors, we want you to take those relationships seriously, and the vendors expect that you are a good match for them. So once you're logged in, we'll approve you, and then we start with making several recommendations and introductions and keep you up to date with the community. We offer webinars every several weeks on different vendors that are joining the marketplace. And we're getting anywhere between, 5 and 15 new SaaS applications joining every month. And so one of the things we do is announce all of those each month to keep you abreast of them. But then we also try to reach out to you directly with those that we believe would be good for your specific business and target customer. So we do try to make it a more personalized sort of concierge relationship. And we always encourage you to call us, reach out, chew on what different opportunities you have coming up, and let us help you come up with some creative added products to your proposals, because it will differentiate you without too much cost to your clients, and it will add a lot of value to you as a trusted advisor and also to your bottom line.
As a reseller, too, I just wanted to throw in there, you should really watch our blog. It's wisesaz.com. You watch our blog. We also announce new vendors as they come on. There's a lot of recorded pieces up there as well, webinars and podcasts and stuff that we do that will keep you abreast of the new pieces coming on.
Excellent. All righty. Well, thank you very much for your time today. I appreciate your being here.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thanks, Carl. It's always good working with you.
I am joined now by Gil Cargill from Cargill Consulting. Welcome, sir.
Hey, how are you, Carl?
Very good. So we are so honored to have you as one of the speakers at our SMB Online Conference this year. And you have a very different kind of topic this time around called the new math of sales excellence. New math makes me nervous, so why don't you tell us a little about that?
Well, don't worry. I flunked calculus, and that's why I'm not an aeronautical engineer. But the foundation is that sales has always been a numbers game, but the people who are not getting optimum results today haven't recognized that the numbers have changed. And my presentation will show your audience what numbers to pay attention to. There are only five in order to drive the most important number, which is your bottom line. If you take care of the five metrics that produce profits, your profit flow and growth will be predictable and easy to manage. The problem many people have, especially in the IT community, is we're trying to grow our profits retroactively. And something that happened last week can't be adjusted. So what we have to do is know what the five metrics are, how to manage them, how to adjust them, and how to control them. And when you do that, your financial future is virtually, I don't want to say guaranteed, but plus or minus 10%, you can hit any target you want to aim at.
Well, that's an interesting thought. So when I think about the numbers, the first thing that comes to mind for me is a sales funnel where there's so many meetings and so many proposals and so many documents and blah, 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 and it works down. So are you talking about that those numbers have changed or that there's different numbers that we need to pay attention to?
They're different numbers. Those are the old school numbers and very traditional. But what they tend to do is they tell you what happened in the past. They don't correlate to what will happen in the future. So we worry about five metrics. The first one is available selling time. So even a one-man band company has to maximize the business day because there's only 2,000 hours of sales time per calendar year, assuming you're taking 2 weeks off for vacation. A lot of that selling time, and I define it as 8 to 5, because that's when buyers are around, if a lot of that selling time is used for non-sales activities, in direct mathematical proportion, you're reducing your optimum potential.
Excellent.
And I've done studies in some companies where the selling time, literally an IT sales force in Charlotte, North Carolina, we did a study on them. They had approximately 17 minutes per day per salesperson to pursue revenue. And management was scratching their heads saying, how come we're not getting new accounts? And the reason being is they were making salespeople do non-sales tasks. The second vital metric that is completely ignored by most sales professionals today, and it's not their fault, but the second metric is the length of the sales cycle. Not measured in weeks or months, but measured in cumulative selling hours. So, for instance, Carl, if it takes 100 hours to bring a new account on board, that's driving time to meet the account, that's face-to-face time, that's writing proposals, doing samples, doing scopes of work, redoing those. If it takes 100 hours of sales time to bring one account on board, one salesperson working full-time can bring 20 accounts on board per year. If we could shrink that 100 hours to, let's say, 75 hours per new account, the salesperson could bring on board 26 accounts per year, and that has a staggering impact on the top and bottom line.
Wow.
So the metric to manage is, where are we trending, or is the length of our sales cycle growing or shrinking? The other three metrics are the number of first meetings in your next 30-day calendar, the quoted dollars per transaction, and the conversion ratio of leads to orders. And when you have control over those five and you're trending them, you are going to start marching towards improved profitability at a very substantial rate.
Well, and obviously you'll go into much more detail in
yeah.
June. And I have to tell folks, you are one of the truly great sales trainers out there, and you've got a system for people to do I guess what is called drip marketing. So how can folks get a hold of you between now and June if they are interested in finding out more?
Sure. They can reach me at 310-447-4102 or Gil, G-I-L, at GILCARGILL.com.
Very good. Well, I appreciate your time today.
I appreciate the call and look forward to working with you guys in June.
And now in today's Oddballs segment, accountant and MSP business consultant Rayanne Buccianico shares some tips on keeping things simple with your business accounting.
Hello, everyone. Rayanne here from ABC Solutions in sunny Clearwater, Florida, bringing you this week's Oddball segment with a QuickBooks tip for you. Today, I would like to talk about bookkeeping. First, let's see a show of hands. How many people here enjoy bookkeeping? Yeah, that's what I thought. The only people who really like bookkeeping are bookkeepers. But here's the catch. Without accurate books, how can you manage and grow your business? Generally speaking, you cannot. Sure, some people manage to be successful without decent financial figures, but most of us need to know how much money we have, how much money we're spending, and if there's any of it left over for us to take home. If you're like many MSPs out there, you believe that bookkeeping takes too much time and you just don't have it to spare. You think, oh, I'll get to it at the end of the week, or maybe I'll do it on the weekend. And then 1 week turns into two, and then 2 weeks turns into a month, and then a month turns into a quarter. And before you know it, it's time to file your income taxes. So what do? You download your bank transactions into QuickBooks and allow QuickBooks to automatically code the transactions and call it a day. But maybe it doesn't need to be such a daunting task. So I have some tips for you. Number one, don't handwrite a check. If you need to pay somebody, print the check. As soon as you handwrite that check, you've automatically duplicated your work because you have to handwrite the check and pay the bill. Then somebody else, you or somebody else, will have to enter that check into the accounting system. So now you've already created double work for yourself. Number two, create generic vendors. QuickBooks does not care if you went to Burger King or McDonald's for lunch, and neither does anyone else. Create one vendor and call that vendor Meals and Entertainment, and post all of your Meals and Entertainment transactions to that vendor, pointing to the Meals and Entertainment expense account. In the memo section, you can say, took Bob Smith to Burger King in hopes of winning him over with a fine meal. One of the benefits of having generic vendors such as Meals and Entertainment or gasoline purchases, and another one of my favorites is personal expenses, is to keep your vendor list small. So if you enter these transactions, you post them to the Meals and Entertainment vendor, it will automatically post to the Meals and Entertainment expense account. This will keep your vendor list from turning into miles long. You don't need 10 different Sunoco vendors, and you don't need, you know, a Sunoco and a Hess and an Exxon, because gasoline is gasoline regardless of what station you drove into that day in order to fill your tank. So that's a real quick and simple way of keeping your vendor list small. Number three. Let your PSA do its job. If you're using a PSA to track items invoiced to your customer, chances are you also have vendor purchases to go along with it. So you buy a computer or a router for your customer. You want to bill that customer. You enter it into the PSA so that it gets onto that customer invoice. But if you also enter the purchase in the PSA, you can transfer that into QuickBooks as well, and that will keep you from having to enter in each purchase, each customer. It'll keep your profitability report simple and accurate, and everything is in one place. If you're doing it for the customer invoice, do it for the vendor bill at the same time and save yourself a lot of time and trouble later down the road. Number four, if you're not using a PSA, enter purchases as soon as they occur. It is much faster to enter a purchase and post it to a customer when it's in front of you. Going back at the end of the month to pull vendor bills to figure out which router went to which customer takes too long and is a lot of work. Do it when it happens and your books and reports will stay much cleaner. Finally, downloading transactions should be used to match and reconcile items between your bank and QuickBooks. It is not designed to replace good data entry. It is fine to enter a select few transactions that were missed during the week, but this should not be your primary source of data entry. I hope you enjoyed this week's segment on keeping your books simple. As luck would have it, I will speak more on this topic in the 2015 SMB Online Conference. I'll hope you'll be able to join me there. You can also now find me in the Tech Your Books department at thirdtier.net. As always, if you have a topic you would like covered in a future segment, feel free to contact me by visiting my website at abcsolutionsfl.com. That's abcsolutionsfl, like Florida.com. Thank you for joining this week's Oddball segment. Until next time, this is Rayanne with ABC Solutions, signing off.
Now for today's tech news, brought to you by neowin.net. When Microsoft releases Windows 10 later this year, it will come with a new design language, which has slowly been uncovered with the latest builds of Windows 10 for phones. One member of the Windows community has put together a massive guide that shows the transitions from Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8.1 to both Windows 10 and Windows 10 for phones. That individual, Martin Anderson, has created a graphic that you can access on the neowin.net site that is extremely detailed and helps users understand what and where the design elements have been updated. Everything from date selection to toggle switches is covered, and it really shows you how Microsoft is thinking about MDL2. Microsoft is changing up all of the UI components across the Windows ecosystem. With a few months to go before RTM and build occurring later in the month, the company will soon need to demonstrate where they are headed with the UI because of, as right now, it's a bit broken across the operating system. Of course, that's to be expected at this current state as the OS is still in development. Although it was previously possible to download your Google search history, it was only available for a select few or was accomplished via unofficial methods. Luckily, Google has now opened up the archive download service and will allow you to download your internet search history in a couple easy steps. In order to start the process, you will first have to log into your Google account. After you have logged in, you will navigate to Google's search homepage. Towards the bottom right-hand corner of the page, you should see a link for settings. By clicking the settings link, you will be able to access a history tab that will show you your previous search history. The search history is fairly detailed with logs by the minute and your hourly search activity. Navigating to the top right-hand corner of the search history page, you will see a gear icon that once clicked will have a download option. From this point, you will simply need to follow the directions which will give you access to download your search history. IKEA is often criticized for lacking soul, but love it or hate it, the company's design aesthetic is a staple of modern homes and offices around the world. And the company wants things to stay that way as it looks to new technologies and the future of smart homes and connected appliances. Now IKEA has released a concept video of their future table, a table that is IKEA's wet dream of how smart technology and sleek design will transform our houses in the near future. The table will be the hub of your kitchen and apparently your social life as well, having a bunch of features integrated into it. From ceiling projectors and smartphone charging to inductive cooking, social networks, games and apps, the future table aims to be a true technical hub. In IKEA's concept video on their website, you can see the table use the overhead projector to display information relevant to whatever you are doing on it. Whether you're trying to cook dinner, learning how to chop fruit, playing with your kids, or simply enjoying your morning coffee, the table will adapt and turn on different functions depending on your needs. The table is part of IKEA's Kitchen 2025 concepts and sits alongside a range of projects such as better water management, food storage options, and other improvements to our daily lives made possible by technology and design. YouTube will soon stop working on older devices thanks to an API change coming from Google. Those affected can only update their software, if possible, or rely on other devices for their viewing pleasure. Google announced in a recent blog post that the old Data API version 2 is being depreciated in favor of a newer version 3, which offers better support for comments, captions, and push notifications. What this actually means is that older devices such as smart TVs, Android and Apple TVs, game consoles, and iOS devices will no longer be able to stream YouTube content. Some of the affected devices are Google TV version 3 and 4, any Apple device running something older than iOS 7, games consoles without support for Adobe Flash or HTML5, and numerous smart TVs and SiC players that never get updated. What can you actually do if you're affected? First of all, update your device to the newest software that's available. Hopefully that's enough. If not, you may be able to continue using YouTube through the device's browser, as long as it supports HTML5. In iOS devices, you'll be able to stream content via AirPlay. Unfortunately, many users of smart TVs will likely be affected, especially as these devices don't get replaced often and are also likely never updated. For those users, there's not much you can do to help them. Marvel's Daredevil TV show just premiered on streaming service Netflix earlier this month, and according to data revealed from a piracy tracking firm, it has already become the second most pirated TV show on the internet since its release. The data indicates that Daredevil has been pirated by more than 2.1 million individual users, second only to HBO's Game of Thrones. Surprisingly, the show has been pirated the most number of times in countries where Netflix is already available and offers plans for as low as $10 a month. Brazil leads with 190,274 torrent downloads of Daredevil's episodes from the time period between the 10th and the 16th of April. Piracy is becoming a major concern for Netflix, mainly outside the U.S., as founder and CEO Reed Hastings and CFO David Wells mentioned in their first quarter 2015 note to shareholders. They also linked it to the graph on Google Trends, indicating that there have been a massive increase in piracy-related searches for Netflix as compared to HBO. Compared to Daredevil, Game of Thrones has been illegally downloaded more than 6.5 million times after four of its Season 5 episodes leaked a day before HBO's airing date. However, this still didn't stop it from registering its best-ever TV viewership. Despite its increasing piracy rates, Netflix reported major quarterly growth in its first quarter of 2015. I'd like to thank NeoWin.net for today's tech news. The SMB Online Conference Series continues. This year's theme is Time to Thrive 2015. Speaker presentations in this year's event include Selling Fundamentals for Owners, Keeping Your Books Simple but Accurate, Building an Awesome Team to Take Your Business to the Next Level, A New Business Model for Success in the Cloud, Business Agile Strategy Execution, and more. Odd Tuesdays listeners can register for this conference at a 20% discount by using coupon code ODDTUESDAYS, that's one word, ODDTUESDAYS, on checkout. Please visit SMB Online Conference to check out the full conference details. A reminder that if you're listening to our show on iTunes, please be sure to check out our website at oddtuesdays.com for past episodes and hyperlinks mentioned in today's show. Please join us in our next episode on May 5th when Carl is joined by Microsoft MVP Robert Crane. Manuel Polichuk will join us in our Oddball segment, and I will share the latest in tech news and events. I look forward to having you join us then. Take care.